For 120 years, Mount Carmel College of Nursing has prepared nurses to serve our communities. Here, our students can earn their Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree and take their education all the way to a Doctor of Nursing practice with small class sizes and help every step of the way. Want to learn more? Visit mccn.edu/visit to schedule your campus visit today. That's mccn.edu/visit.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Up to 100,000 homes and businesses are likely to be without power for the rest of the week in the aftermath of last week's storm Eowyn. Some will be cut off from the grid until perhaps the end of next week. At least 180,000 customers remained without electricity last evening, but that's down from a peak of 768,000 affected. Would it make any difference to have the politicians back in Dáil Éireann? We'll talk about that in a little while with Fionnán Sheehan. But first, joining me is Siobhan Wynne, ESB Networks Regional Manager. Good morning, Siobhan.
Good morning, Pat.
Can you bring us up to speed on how many houses are still without power, and businesses indeed, and what the prognosis might be for them?
Yes, so this morning there's 180,000 farms, homes, businesses that remain without supply. We've made very good progress now over the course of yesterday again, and we have been getting assistance there from some of the British crews who arrived over the weekend. We have also got additional crews now arriving in this morning. So we have crews coming in by ferry from Austria. They've landed there at 7:30 this morning. And then also we've got Finnish crews landing later this morning, and they will be heading now to the worst affected areas.
Now, do those crews have to come with their own trucks, or do they just bring their gear that they can carry and then you truck them up?
So, yeah, so it's a bit of both. So the Austrian crews have travelled over land, so they've brought their own vehicles and equipment. The Finnish crews have travelled by plane, and we've also had a charter plane arrive with all of their equipment. So they'll be heading to our own central location now this morning, where they'll get briefed in terms of safety, and they'll then be set to work then later this morning.
Now, what difference will these make in terms of the promises that you were making, and some, you know, very disappointing promises, I suppose, that people could be 10 days without power? Is that window going to shorten because of the arrival of these crews?
We built these crews into our calculations. So those figures that we had issued, or the forecasts that we had issued, for to have the majority back by the end of this week, but with, you know, possibly up to 100,000 people without power after the weekend, still stands. You know, as over the course of the next day or two, we may be able to improve on that. But we have built these crews into that calculation.
Now, what are the difficulties specifically that you're encountering? I mean, is it that you need tree surgeons as well as electricians to do this job?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So like timber is obviously, you know, had a huge impact in this storm. Like almost all of our faults are associated in some way with either branches down or trees taking down our lines or poles. So in regard to that, we have a large number of timber cutting crews out there. Again, arriving today, we have additional crews coming from the UK to assist us with timber cutting also. So that's the primary issue, really, is the number of faults. You know, we still have thousands of fault sites, you know, over the northern part of the country that we need to visit and repair. So it's the sheer volume and the amount of network that's been damaged by predominantly by trees.
Now, clearly, you have to prioritise. Can you tell us how you do that? Clearly, you're giving some priority to Irish Water, because water is the stuff of life and everybody needs it and they need a clean supply. So is that priority number one?
The first priority always, you know, when we have a storm, is to make situations safe if there are, you know, public safety risks out there on the network. So we'll attend to all of those first. We will then attend to all of our high voltage circuits to try and restore, you know, large groups of customers. We then move on to the medium voltage, where we're restoring, you know, towns and villages. But in conjunction with that, as you say, we manage the key stakeholders. So all of the utilities will be, you know, attended to as part of that. So that involves whether it's Irish Water or the communication companies. All of those are involved at that stage.
Now, I was reading that the government is going to get some electricity generators from some sort of EU standby emergency stock. Do you know what role they will play?
So I think the plan for those would be to assist if, you know, if there are still communities or villages without power, that they could be used to assist with those situations. So that's the plan. I'm not sure now.
Do you have any idea what size they are or how they will work? I mean, it's one thing to put up a small generator and people can, for example, charge their phones. It's another thing to hook up into your network and power a village.
It is, yes, yeah, no, and this will be different. We have a small number of those generators already, and we're looking to deploy them in those kinds of situations where you might, you know, connect them up to a small community or village. We've done that in a number of locations already. So when these generators arrive, it will be something similar that we'd be looking to. So, like, really, you want to deploy them where you'll get the best value for, you know, installing them.
But you'll be involved, presumably, in their deployment.
Yes, absolutely. If they will be installing them on our network, it will be our technicians that will be installing them to ensure that they're safely installed.
Now, what lessons have ESB Networks learned for future-proofing the network? I know this is a once in a 2 or 3 decades storm. It's not, I'm told, associated with climate change. It's just one of those things that happened from time to time. Is there any way of hardening the network? People will talk about get rid of overhead lines, put them underground. That tends to be the catch cry.
It does. Yeah, as you say, like I think this event now really is kind of once in a lifetime, hopefully. You know, no network is going to be able to withstand winds of 183 kilometres per hour. Our network is quite resilient, you know, it's able to deal with most of what the Atlantic sends us. And it is different, you know, to even to the UK. It's maybe like 2, 3, 4 times more network per customer, but compared to the European average, we've 6 times the amount of network per customer. So, like, it is very extensive. It's 160,000 kilometres of overhead line. You know, underground isn't always the answer to that if you're, you know, if you've got long lengths of network out to remote locations either. And really, if you're trying to balance, you know, the cost with the, you know, providing a resilient network. So, like, our network is built to international standards and it has held up well, you know, in recent storms.
So the reason we have such an extensive network here is because of the relative underpopulation of our island. Is that the case?
Yes, that's exactly it. You know, we're very geographically dispersed population across the country. So we don't tend to group in urban centres. You know, there's a lot of remote locations that we need to connect. And the best way of doing that is through an overhead network.
And finally, I should ask you, you know, the politicians are not sitting. Would it make any difference to the kind of operation you're running if you had some sort of, and I'll put this in quotes, guidance from Dáil Éireann?
No, I think, like, in fairness to everybody, the NECG, the National Emergency Coordination Group, has been sitting now since Thursday, and all of the utilities and all of the key stakeholders, you know, along with local authorities, the Department of Defence, have all been involved in that. And there's been great cooperation with all of those agencies.
All right, Siobhan Wynn, ESB Networks Regional Manager. Siobhan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Pat.
Well, now to get an idea of what the situation is like on the ground in some of the worst affected areas of the storm, Éowyn, we are crossing to Ballyjames, Duffin, Cavan. Councillor Shane P. O'Reilly joins me from there. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and good morning to your listeners.
Now, you're a parish of some 6,000 people. How are people doing?
Actually, look at the situation is that there are some people without water, some people without power, and there are some people without both, and then there are some people with power but not water, or vice versa. And that's the issue that we're facing into now at the present time.
Now, how much of the effort to help your local people has come from the national government? How much has come from the council?
But the council has been absolutely exemplary in what they've been doing. I have to pay tribute to the outdoor staff, Cavan County Council. They've been there to help at every given opportunity. As regards to civil defence, our county Cavan Fire Service have been exemplary. So have the ESB Networks and the Irish Water Technicians working on the ground. But first and foremost, the people who have done more for anybody has to be the agricultural community in this area. They have been absolutely amazing. Now, we've been working at this since Friday. Now, this isn't just something that happened, you know, on Saturday or Sunday after the storm had hit. The issues became very prevalent on Friday in the immediate, I suppose, wake of the the larger gusts that had happened. So in fairness to the agricultural community, they were out like a shot, and anybody who I contacted and asked for help were without hesitation, they put their shoulder to the wheel, whether it be in statutory organisations or whether it be within the local community. And I think that that's testament to the community spirit that we have in this area.
Now tell us about what you've done. Say for people who have no water, what have you done?
So for people that have no water, we've been working in conjunction with Irish Water and also with the local authority. So we've tankers basically placed around the different towns and villages or whatever like that. The tanker that's actually placed here in my own village now has been filled four times. So I think it's 28,000 litres.
For 120 years, Mount Carmel College of Nursing has prepared nurses to serve our communities. Here, our students can earn their Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree and take their education all the way to a Doctor of Nursing practice with small class sizes and help every step of the way. Want to learn more? Visit mccn.edu/visit to schedule your campus visit today. That's mccn.edu/visit.
Four times, you can tell you the draw that's on that for people who are using it, whatever. And of course, there's a boil notice on that as well. We have set up then on Sunday. I was in contact with the chief executive of the local authority to try and open up some of our local authority buildings that had power, and we could use those facilities for people who wish to charge phones, devices, maybe get a bit of internet coverage, and have a hot cup of tea, which is a thing that can soothe all ills when we're in this country. Anyway, we like our tea. But what we did was we opened our libraries and we set up the community hubs. So we have community hubs in most areas of the county of Cavan, and I see our counterparts in Monaghan and a couple of other counties have started to do them now in the last while. In my own village here of Mulla, where the Killian's Lodge Hotel would have opened as a community hub, offering free showers for people. And yesterday, when your reporter was here with us in our village, we would have seen over 20 people with their laptops working from that hub.
And that's a free service for from the hotel, you know, the showers and so on. That's terrific, because we've heard of at least one hotel charging €20 a pop for a shower.
Well, you know, you're
not in your area, I hasten to add.
No. Well, we, Cavan people get a bad rep that we're always out for money. But I can tell you in this instance, Pat, we're here to help everybody. But I have to say, you know, I'm listening to people talk over the last number of days about recalling the Dáil and doing this and doing that and doing the other. It would be a great help if those who are involved in legislation would allow a lot of felling licences, would allow Quilcher to actually go out and do their job and get some of these trees out of the way of the power lines. And I think, as Siobhan Rin has rightly said to you in the interview immediately prior to me coming on, there is a major issue with trees falling on lines. And we have a major problem in this country. We are following a certain agenda where, you know, the trees felling licences haven't been, processed over a long number of years.
Shane, for people who don't know, we've covered it on the programme a number of times. It is inexplicable to me why those licences have not been issued so that proper, orderly tree felling could take place.
Well, now you see the outcome of it. We, in this area, have a number of Quilcher forests, and that is where the problems are. That is where, and it's not Quilcher's fault. They want to do the thinning, they want to do the felling, they want to do what they're doing. There are statutory agencies that are there to do that, they're National Forestry Service, and they have been hampered every given opportunity by people who are objecting to the issuing of felling licences. And I do believe, Pat, that we need to look at that. It is far too easy to raise an objection for the sake of it. I do think that we need to look at increasing the cost of placing an objection to a licence. It is therefore to make it that you would have to have a very good reason as to not do so.
Finally, Shane, how are your schools? Are your schools open?
But our school is back open this morning, so our local national school here across from us has opened this morning. We're working on the premise there that the tanks have enough water to keep it going, but it's only a half day. They're only doing a half day today. They were closed yesterday. Our secondary school, which will be the closest one to me here, Virginia College, is back open today. A tree actually went through the roof of the canteen, and fair play to the principal and the staff there have done a fantastic work in getting the school back open, and the tradespeople that were involved there. St Clair's College in Ballyjames Duff, it's still closed, and a number of national schools are still closed due to simply hygiene reasons. If you don't have water, you can't have little ones at school.
Very good.
Now, look, Shane, our power and water is coming back. It's an intermittent supply, I suppose, or whatever. But we're very, very thankful to everyone involved. Mm. And look, at everyone came out of it safe in this area, and that's the main thing.
Well, Shane, you absolutely are the aftermath of the storm in microcosm there in Ballyjames Duff. Thank you very much for joining us. That's Cavan County Councillor Shane P. O'Reilly. Fionnán Sheen, Ireland editor of the Irish Independent. Good morning, Fionnán.
Good morning, Pat.
So, should we bring the TDs back, and how much help would they be?
Yeah, so, I mean, there are legitimate calls by the opposition, and this is their job, to say that Dáil should be sitting, and that you could, I presume, cover a wide range of areas, from the response to the emergency, the return of power and water, humanitarian aid being in place, insurance claims, preparations for weather emergencies, the impact on farming, issues just like felling licenses and school closures that you've just discussed. So that's fair enough to call for the Dáil to return, but I suppose you have to have a bit of self-awareness as well. And having watched events unfold last week, you'd kind of wonder, well, what exactly will you achieve by having the Dáil return rather than having ministers out doing their actual job? So I don't think there is a prospect of the Dáil returning, but the individual ministers are going to have to be seen to be very active over the course of this week and given constant briefings on all the fierce hard work.
Do you think they've been absent a bit much? Now, we know that the NECG, the National Emergency Coordination Group, did meet on Thursday before the storm actually hit the south coast. So they were, you know, believing what Met Éireann were saying. They were telling us there would be consequences, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what forward planning they did, but they did meet, and they are under the auspices of the Department of Defence, which is the responsibility of Simon Harris.
Now Tánaiste Simon Harris. Of course, on the morning in question, it would have been the then Tánaiste Micheál Martin in charge of the Department of Defence, and then as the day went on, it would have been Simon Harris. So I suppose you had that interregnum period, and you can certainly say political attention was elsewhere before the storm hit. So I think the row will continue, but I don't really see it going anywhere. Government has a clear majority here, but they're all going to have to, you know, show that everything possible that can be done by the state is being done. And as we get into the latter stages of this week, and people are going a full week without water and electricity, I think that pressure is going to continue on government. So I know that the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste have both been either out or currently out of the country on business. The public is going to want to see that they have a handle on it. So there's a cabinet meeting tomorrow. You'd expect there will be a major update on the situation after that. Mm.
It does seem a bit tardy, though, doesn't it? A storm hits Friday, and Wednesday we may get some sort of formal statement from government. I mean, the optics of it are all wrong.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised yesterday. There was ministers kind of popping up on the radar yesterday, you know, almost on a happenstance basis, that they haven't, you know, kind of being seen to be more present is certainly a question mark. Sometimes in these situations, look, there are, as you say, there are emergency committees involved at a national level. They're coordinating then at a local level. But I think Joe and Josephine Public likes to see that there is political accountability here and that ministers are to the forefront of that. So, you know, you need to expect, just as we saw in California with the wildfire situation, people want to see their elected leaders are the ones that are out front coordinating these responses.
Now, on to the politics of the day and the appointment of junior ministers. The question of women's representation at senior level. We know that there are only three women in the senior cabinet. An opportunity to redress the imbalance in the ranks of the junior ministers or not?
Yeah, so we already know where seven of these junior ministries are going, and that's basically the five independents, of whom only one is a woman, and two super junior ministers who got left out of full cabinet positions, Hildegard Nocton of Fine Gael and Mary Butler of Fianna Fáil, along with Marion Harkin, the independent. So that's three out of seven. So we're then breaking it down, and we know that Fianna Fáil are going to have 10 junior ministers and Fine Gael are going to have eight. So they've one selected each. So you'd imagine that out of the rest of that number, Micheál Martin and Simon Harris will need to show that they are making some effort here. It is no less a figure than, I'll give you this quote, the dramatic underrepresentation of half the population in our government dilutes our political, distorts our political culture and weakens our political decision making. And no less a figure than Taoiseach Micheál Martin expressed that view a number of years back. So they're going to need to show that they are taking this issue seriously, that after telling the public that they were putting forward 40% of candidates who were female in the last general election, that they are actually responding better than having just 20% of women at a cabinet table level. So within Fine Gael, you're looking at, they have 10 Fine Gael female TDs. Apart from those who are already picked, the next most experienced, Emer Curry, the senator from Dublin West, will definitely be knocking on the door. Emer Higgins, who's already a junior minister, is destined to stay there. And of the new crop of TDs, Paula Butterley, new Louth TD, a barrister, is being spoken of as a possibility there. And then on the Fianna Fáil side, you'd be fairly shocked now if Catherine Arda and Niamh Smith, at the very least, are not promoted to the ministerial ranks. And that's on merit as well. This isn't about quotas or anything like that. In those cases, they have a very strong claim to be promoted to the ministerial rank. So I think that there is going to be a sensitivity there. We were being told last week that, geography and gender were factors in the selection process at cabinet level, but certainly you'd argue gender very definitely wasn't, given that the numbers of women sitting at the top table actually dropped. And you had less in senior cabinet portfolios. So the pair of them are going to have to address that this week.
Yeah. I heard Frances Fitzgerald on The Hard Shoulder yesterday effectively launching her presidential bid by saying she wouldn't rule it out, of course, but also calling for saying it would be a good idea to have quotas for TDs in the Dáil, although it would be a long road to get there at the same time.
Anyway. Yeah, and you have your difficulty there because quotas for candidates is one thing, but quotas for actually electing people is another. So, you know, how exactly that would work? You'd have to have different panels then or within constituencies about the number of each gender that has to be elected. Tricky one there. Somewhere that they definitely could do it and they can't be bothered is in the Shannon, which yet again is being elected without any reform whatsoever later on this week. So that's one for the annual canard of Shannon reform, I'm sure will kick off straight away. There's no reason you couldn't have a gender quota in the Shannon. There's no reason you couldn't say 50% of people elected to this house have to be male, 50% have to be female, simple as that.
Well, no doubt subject to legal challenge. But anyway, Fionnán, thank you very much for joining us. Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor of the Irish Independent.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
For 120 years, Mount Carmel College of Nursing has prepared nurses to serve our communities. Here, our students can earn their Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree and take their education all the way to a Doctor of Nursing practice with small class sizes and help every step of the way. Want to learn more? Visit mccn.edu/visit to schedule your campus visit today. That's mccn.edu/visit.